Welcome to Turnpikers, the show about the people who make up the Denver and Boulder tech scene. We're your hosts, Luke Beatty and Danny Newman. Information about this show is available at turnpikers.com and at turnpikers on Twitter. Welcome to this episode of Turnpikers. We have the good fortune of having the rich and famous Eric Matisic with us today, who's now about to take off on his newest adventure, and we booked him on the show before we even knew this was going to be such great timing. So, Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Luke. Thank you, Danny. Excited to be here and really excited about this new program. It's something we really needed to pull together, the ecosystem, and your first episodes have been awesome.
Thanks. Give everybody a quick little background on all the stuff you've done in the past, and then we'll dive into what you're doing now. Most of the 10 to 15 people that listen to this podcast know who you are, but why don't we just spend a few minutes on that before we start asking some real hard-hitting questions.
Well, I would say first and foremost, I'm a lover of Colorado. Being a native, I spent 15 years in the private sector, and I should say, like, building companies, startups here. But in my new role, this private sector is this word that captures anything that's not civically driven. And about 4 years ago, I made the decision to really dive in really deep to see if we could really build a bunch of infrastructure, build a bunch of programs, and just elevate Colorado on the national stage from a technology and innovation perspective. And so we've been really busy in that time, have been involved in projects.
And we is who? I don't think people know who we is on that side.
Sure. So the last 3 years I've served as a CEO for the Colorado Technology Association. It's our industry trade association for the technology economy in Colorado, a little over 600 members. We represent over 50% of the IT workforce in the state of Colorado. So over 90,000 workers are represented by our board. Wow. And those are big companies. Those are like Dish, Level 3, ViaWest, Oracle, the really big businesses that are not hiring 2, 3, 5 people a quarter. They're hiring hundreds of people a year. And so I've just been really blessed to work with that organization and their leadership to elevate the voice of advocacy and making the tech economy easy to navigate in Colorado, driving economic development, recruiting more great companies to the state, but most importantly, taking care of our own and making sure we've got great stories like Datalogix and Logrhythm and Orbotix
Aero.
And Aero, exactly, to continue to drive the ecosystem. And then, most importantly, what are we doing to build more great innovators and technologists? These companies can only grow as fast as they can put really wicked, smart people in their offices. So what are the programs and what are the higher education, frameworks that allow us to produce in our state the best and brightest so we can continue to keep up with this global economy?
And the new endeavor.
Yeah, the new endeavor. I feel very honored to have the opportunity to work with Governor Hickenlooper over the course of the greater part of the last year. And recently was appointed the Chief Innovation Officer for the state. So I have the opportunity to continue to elevate the dialogue. And really credit and kudos goes to him. I mean, he is a deep innovator. He's an entrepreneur by background, as we all know. So having someone in that role as an entrepreneur who's walking innovation every single day, it's fueling our state. And he's really focused on those innovators and those builders and those leaders who want to make Colorado the best state in the union. And so I feel blessed.
The best union.
The best union.
We're going to turn this place into a union if it kills us.
You and Uber, baby. No, it's just been a blast. And I would say I'm going back to my alma mater. And so that's something I'm incredibly excited about. Having, left the campus about 18 years ago, I was invited back by Chancellor Chopp and J.B. Holston and Brent Kreit and Marty Katz and the entire team over there to help translate and
that's
build
the University of Denver.
University of Denver.
Yep.
Yeah, University of Denver. And really translate entrepreneurship, innovation, and technology onto campus. And the secret plan is to really build that MIT or Stanford of Colorado by bringing the industry and those and innovation as close to the campus as possible while getting students and faculty deeply involved in the dialogue that we're all involved in every day to accelerate innovation, invention, get more people to work in these great industries in Colorado and just elevate University of Denver and our higher education system in the state to one of the best in the U.S.
And how much connectivity is there going to be for you from, obviously, these are both sort of new, but the connectivity that you see between being the state's chief innovation officer and then the program at DU?
I feel incredibly.
And asked in a different way, how did you convince them that you could have two full time jobs? Or did they even know? Do they know?
Not yet. They don't know.
This is breaking news.
breaking news.
Yeah, Eric has accepted two full time jobs without the company's knowing.
No, it's my appointment with the governor. He's an incredible recruiter of volunteers to drive our state. And so when you look at some of the folks that have been behind me, take Aaron Kennedy, who is our chief marketing officer, who actually really had a full-time job. My job is to lead as the chair of the Colorado Innovation Network and then, advise on innovative activities here in the state of Colorado. And so it's definitely something that's going to take my time, but it's not a job in full-time capacity.
How long has that role been, the chief innovation officer? Is that a...
It's been in place since the Colorado Innovation Network was created, so I think it's probably about 5 years.
Okay.
The last chief innovation officer was held, the position was held by Mark Sarangelo, who's the CEO of Sierra Nevada, did a terrific job building out the Colorado Innovation Network, executed two wonderful programs, and really embodied what we were trying to do with that. And so I think in this role, we're trying to take the Colorado Innovation Network to the next level, but also bring in dialogue across all these emerging industries that have deep innovation. So take agriculture or healthcare or oil and gas, insurance, banking, these things that have not yet been touched by technology and innovation heavily. How do we bring in those really big economies into this dialogue that us technologists have been talking about for a long time? And so it's that bridge, a natural bridge for the work I've been doing to do that. The full-time job and where my heart lives every single day is bridging the activity that the University of Denver and their leadership team have done a terrific job building over there with our industry and tech economy here in Colorado. And so Chancellor Chopp, she's been in the job for a little over a year, has just brought an entirely new chapter of leadership to that campus. If we think back over the last 15 years, Dan Ritchie, who we all know and love here in Colorado, he really put together all those amazing buildings, the lacrosse stadium, which Luke, I know you love to go to, and really kind of took the DU of old to a DU of new through physical space. Bob Coombe stepped in and kind of stabilized that huge growth era. And Chancellor Chopp has come in. She's hailing from incredible universities. She's led institutions like this before. She's a first female chancellor in the 150-year school history. And she's moving fast. She's very inclusive. She's an amazing leader. And she's putting people like J.B. Holston and Brent Kreit and David Miller, who ran the Denver Foundation for 20 years, to build a philanthropy institute inside of the a philanthropy program inside of the University of Denver. She's just being innovative. And she's going to take it to the next level. And it's an incredible time to be there and to do it through innovation, entrepreneurship, and technology with the project Excite, which we're building. It couldn't be a better time to take that energy, orientate it to the broader community, and expose them to all the really cool stuff that's happening there. But most importantly, 110% focus on the students and faculty to get them deeply engaged. So when they graduate, they're already thinking like innovative leaders. What am I going to build? Am I going to build a nonprofit organization? Am I building a political campaign? Am I building a company? Whatever those tools are, they've got a resource inside the campus to grab that and go be awesome builders.
Project Excite. Is that an acronym?
Project X, and then
Couldn't they come up with a get the word University of Denver in there somehow, or
Project Excite?
It is a wholly run within the organization, within the university, though.
Wholly
right?
owned within the university.
Yep.
Yeah, and the acronym ITE is Innovation, Technology, and Entrepreneurship.
Got it.
The real fusion is to take these schools that usually live by themselves. So take the business school. There's an entrepreneurial program inside of there. In a lot of universities, it just lives there.
Yep.
And even in Colorado, the best ones just live there. The breakthrough idea, which was really led by J.B. Holston and Chancellor Chopp, was to say, let's look at this in a universal fashion. There's entrepreneurship and innovation and technology in the same in the law school as in the business school, as in the science, math, and engineering school. Let's look at all those and what are the commonalities, and then what are the unique elements that allow those schools to excel. But let's share this thing called innovation, entrepreneurship, and technology, so we're not fighting, we're collaborating and we're elevating. And so Project Excite's that attempt to start with those three schools and then use that as a platform to unite not just those three, but all the departments on campus through this dialogue of how do we create the best builders, innovators, and entrepreneurs of the future at DU. And so it's a huge experiment. It's heavily supported by the chancellor and the leadership of at the university, and it's one of the first of its kind to combine all three departments in a unified strategy to elevate entrepreneurship and innovation to the highest level on campus. led by the students in the front and the faculty deeply engaged, and with deep research and really driving on the core tenets around entrepreneurship that higher education can really excel.
So if that works out well, in 5 years, you have the university is producing what would you say? Would you say it's incubating businesses? Is it producing sort of these incredibly well-prepared, diverse students? Is it keeping kids on campus after they graduate so that there's sort of like an innovation center for folks once they've left the school? Or have you and JB sort of figured out, like, what does that look like in 5 years for people?
It's the project right now is really embryonic. And so there's a framework and a box where it lives. But I think the first things first is to really get that collective inclusion on campus to define what Project Excite is. For us to walk into a huge university with, you know, a 150-year legacy and say, hey, we're a bunch of entrepreneurs, we're going to do this, everyone's going to follow in suit, and we've got this amazing idea that's going to transform higher education. It's dead on arrival. Like, it doesn't go anywhere. And there's a lot of carnage that of institutions that have tried to hire that leader or that program and never integrated it into campus. The secret sauce around Project Excite as we get started is just as Chancellor Chopp started with, Imagine DU. She took a national tour, asked every single alum and trustee and donor, if you had the perfect DU, what would it be? What's missing? We're going to do the same thing with Project Excite. So, you know, to say what it's going to be 5 years from now, that's a product of what the students, the alumni, the faculty, and the staff all want it to be. At its core, it's a translation of what Dee's been doing for 150 years, which is producing amazing leaders across industry, across, you know, organizations, but adding an element of risk, adding an element of entrepreneurship, and an element of innovative thinking. So they're really prepared for, you know, those of us who've been entrepreneurs our whole career, to be much more nimble, to be much more agile in their thinking, to be contemporary in how they approach solving problems, and marrying that with the opportunity to be great leaders. And so when we look at Project Excite 5 years out, there's some great markings on the wall as it relates to Stanford and MIT with things like the Design School or some of their Pitch Fest or some of their really big innovation programs that they have global institutes where they kind of take Stanford off campus and they take it into industry or they take it to other countries. There's a lot of different programs that can be connected to Project Excite. But we really hope that the campus and the leadership help define it and they own it, because with that really deep ownership on campus, not only does everyone excited about what we've built, but they're engaged in attending, they're engaged in owning it, and it's something that they really know and love. And so we're early, and I think with that inclusion, we'll define it. But at its core, it's really about elevating leaders and making sure that they have the innovative and next-generation tools to be effective in this new generation of work. What's your input, Luke? I mean, you were a high school teacher. I mean, yeah. You, back at Galvanize, I mean, one of the first times I walked into Galvanize with Jim Dieters, the real estate agent said, you know, this school is not only special because it's an amazing Galvanize One, but Luke Beatty actually taught inside of this building.
Right. I think it's great. I mean, as a person who lives, you know, a driver and a pitching wedge from the campus. I feel like it's the most incredible story in town for the last 10 years. I mean, if you think about every small private university in cities all across the United States, I'm sure they all have these incredible 20-year plans to change from being a sort of smaller, less influential kind of where do I fit in the world of academia to being something that has had the insanely fast growth that DU has had from an enrollment perspective, from a physical plant perspective, from a curriculum. I mean, I've never seen anything like it.
You
know?
It's incredible.
I mean, you look at, I sat on a plane not so long ago with a very senior administrator at the University of Cincinnati. And that's kind of a corollary, right? You know? And among those people, no one's ever seen anything that's happened as fast and as efficient and quality growth of a private university in a city environment, right? And mm-hmm. There's so many advantages and restrictions of being in a city, but it's incredible. And every time they roll out a new thing that they're going to do, it's done. It's done really well. It's done with the best people. And, you know, the thing that I always say about DU that's incredible too is like, now people stick around.
That's right.
Right? Sure. I mean, I've never seen anything like it, whether they're people go to that university and then they stay. They might even stay working at the university. I've never seen a college or university have that kind of retention of just human capital. And they just stick around and they keep building it, whether they're administrators, like I say, or students.
And it's interesting. I mean, you've watched that, 25 years ago, that was an organization in a school that was going through some hard times.
Yeah.
And
when I was a kid, I don't know that it crossed the mind of anyone but like 10 of my friends, probably the same for both of you guys who grew up here.
In the neighborhood.
I didn't know anybody that thought about going to DU.
Totally.
And we obviously were on campus all the time, but I don't know anybody that was efforting to go there except for a very few select people who had a very specialized reason for wanting to do that. And now they're lined up around the building three times.
The enrollment's never been higher. Huh. And the physical plan, I mean, Dan Ritchie and the board of trustees over that 15-year period that he was involved, and they spent $500 million building real estate on that campus. An amazing new physical plans for fitness.
In a short period of time.
Elevated it to Division I, built a new business school. And the thing that got me most excited, full disclosure, when I was at DU, my third day of school as a freshman, I started a company. It paid for majority of my school. So I had this really entrepreneurial experience at DU personally. And I look back and I didn't have an outlet. Like, I was this entrepreneur that was selling t-shirts and sweatshirts and embroidering stuff, but I didn't have like a group of folks I could hang out with and be like, hey, like, where do I get a line of credit? Like, I got this really big order. My grandma's totally tapped. Like, right. How do I solve this problem? I had no resource on campus inside of a big school at the time to really effectively manage that. And so I think bringing that type of easy resource pool to the campus is going to be amazing. But I think the other thing is that students want it. We have millennials that they want to build stuff, and not just companies. They want to build political organizations. They want to build nonprofits. Build stuff. They just want to be impactful and live impactful lives. And you got guys like JB Holston, Luke. He ran Ziff Davis. Was a senior executive at Yahoo, where you worked. He worked for GE at the most senior levels, and he started a handful of companies here in Colorado. I mean, he's a heralded entrepreneur that's now going in as a dean that doesn't have an advanced degree, that's flipping around the mechanics of that element inside the university, saying the past is amazing, but our future is brighter.
Yep.
And we've got to rethink the way that higher education is delivered, and we got to do it through entrepreneurship and innovation. So it's a really exciting time.
You've been, I feel like, the a huge driver and the main kind of push behind a lot of the Denver startup scene. I think we owe you a huge amount of thanks and credit for really just elevating everything that we're doing here in this scene. So I definitely think that everything that you're doing at DU, it's going to happen, because when you put your effort behind stuff, it really cranks out. Can you talk a little bit about you in a very short amount of time really built built what we've got here in the Denver startup scene, Denver Startup Week, everything, all the work that you've done at CTA. You really brought the community and everyone together in a very short amount of time. I feel like, Boulder, had this very nice, concrete community, and Denver was just lacking any kind of organization and community. Mm. The people were here, but I really see you as the guy who kind of brought all of that together. Can you give us a little background
And I mean, humbly, I mean, there's a lot of people that have built Denver. And I think just like this program, like the fact that you took the initiative to say, hey, I'm Luke, I'm Danny, I'm sick and tired of this Boulder Denver thing. There's such radical dialogue. We're all now one. We're going to start a podcast, and it's going to be called Turnpikers, and we're going to elevate all this amazing stuff. Story after story after story around the Colorado Tech community is that. And I would say my journey has been no different. I mean, I got really hooked in 2011. I met Phil Weiser and Brad Feld, and we launched the fifth chapter of the Startup America Partnership, which became Startup Colorado. And that was kind of a container for this early embryonic activity around what was called, use Brad's words, startup community building. At that time, startup communities were not a term. It was like this really, ephemeral term of people getting together in high density that were creating companies. There wasn't a startup community. And so I think in that period of time, startup communities was defined. Brad later wrote a book, as we all know, but he set forth some really important principles that to this day, whenever I violate them, shit goes really wrong. And when I follow them, things happen really, really well. And, you know, they're simple things, you know, like the principle around who's leading the dialogue. You know, there are leaders and feeders, and that really deep entrepreneurial led core. Denver Startup Week is a program that's a huge success to the entrepreneurial leadership that started that. You look at Denver Founders. That's an entrepreneurial led, you know, 100% grassroots effort that to this day is super strong because it's led by entrepreneurs. So that's been really, really, really important. But when I think of the journey, Denver in 2011 didn't have a lot of stuff. There was 9 meetups. You know, in 2015, we took quick inventory on Built In, which I helped bring to Colorado. There's 92 meetups 5 years later. So 10 times the amount of people meeting on a monthly basis.
More meetings.
From 2000. Awesome. but across all types of content. And so, you know, Denver Startup Week was that really big seminal thing that I think that
it's so got it huge. It's amazing.
How many people,
what happens, it's like you walk around downtown and it's like Lanyard City.
Lanyard City. I mean, we have the chance. I mean, it's right now, rough math, it's half the size of South by Southwest Interactive in its fourth year. So, if the community continues to embrace it, this could be the like framework and the event for startups in not only Colorado, but in the West. And it's ours to own. Brian Leach said, let's take all of our eggs out of all the baskets of the other 91 things, and let's put all our eggs in this one basket called Denver Startup Week, and let's blow that thing up.
That's the way it needs to be. I mean, if you can get everybody behind one thing as opposed to everybody deciding that they need their own thing, I just feel like, you know, we do that all the time because everybody's such a startup person that they feel like they want to start something up all the time.
And that's right.
I think there's obviously a place for that, and then there's not a place for that.
People have really done that a great job.
You guys have done that, especially as you make the schedule and the agenda around that. You do an awesome job of making places for the sub-communities to be a part of the bigger event so that they don't have to necessarily fragment off and then have their own event, right? And it's just like that is a it's been done really well.
You guys have been huge supporters. I mean, Danny was one of the, you know, technically one of the founders of Denver Startup Week and that first beer that we had, you know, back in 2012. Yep. So it's like it's been a community thing, and it's owned by the community, it's driven by the community. Entrepreneurs at the center of it. And now you've got great organizations like the Downtown Denver Partnership and the Colorado Technology Association and infrastructure that's centered underneath it that allows it to be really big. And great guys like Ben Dadick, Galvanize, Tammy Dorr, DDP, and our entire staff, our entire 300-plus volunteers. It's a big ship.
Yeah, it's
and,
huge.
And it's amazing. It can define us.
All right, so I have two things that I want to talk to you about and get your perspective on. And two of them, you're sort of the only person I feel like is qualified to discuss these things. So I want to make sure that we get to them before we run out of time. The first thing is around, I think when you and I went fishing a couple months ago, we discussed this. One of my biggest concerns about the Denver Boulder community is that we have this problem, which could be called too many startups, or it could be called there's not enough bigger mezzanine level and big, maybe publicly traded sort of tech organizations in the area. And I feel like that imbalance is a big problem.
Yep.
And I don't know that people call it out directly enough.
Or maybe not even realize it.
Or maybe it's not even really a problem. It's just something that I definitely think
it's a problem. I just don't think people necessarily have made that connection.
And I feel like we're so over our skis on startups, and I think the common response is, well, we're not good at startups, so we're not organically building mezzanine level companies and taking them into bigger enterprise environments, and that may be the case. Sometimes, as you guys have efforted to getting companies like Aero to move here, but in any case. How serious do you think that problem is?
Yeah, I get asked this question a lot, and I think that it's interesting to see what's happened over the course of the last 5 years because there was this time when startups could really fix problems in cities. Like, they were faster, more nimble, easier to fund. They were, you know, inexpensive to get going. And today, you've watched these really big organizations like Dish and like Aero come all the way down market, and they're competing in the same innovation circles as the startup. In their defending their turf, but also iterating and accelerating their innovation internally as fast as the startup community. Dynastically different than 5 years ago, and the barriers to move an incumbent or defeat an Aero or a Dish at their game is getting higher and higher because now they're in the game. So I think having that big breadth of big companies is really healthy for all of us. But now that they're in those innovative circles and they're starting labs and they're in the city and they're hiring millennials and they're coding, they're doing all the stuff that early stage companies do, they're in the game. And so that's going to change the way the city operates because you have really big companies operating in that MES level. I think people ask about the economic development strategy. And, you know, why do we lose to an Austin? Why do we lose to a Chicago? And when you look at all the math, there's no reason we ever should lose. It's a better place to live. We have the most educated workforce. People will move here. You can ski. You can do it. It's insane. It's like, this is the best secret in the United States. But people who are making those decisions, they don't have time. And they make quick decisions based on things that won't get them fired. And if I fly over Austin and I see a gigantic Apple banner at their Apple complex, and I see a big Facebook logo, and then I cruise down the street and I see a Whole Foods, and then I see a really big logo for HomeAway, I'm like, wow, Apple and Facebook, that must be amazing, right? That level of engagement, which we've done a really good job through acquisition in the last 3 or 4 years, when that starts to elevate and the Twitter in Boulder becomes Twitter, the Google complex becomes Big Google, the Uber mapping asset becomes Uber in Colorado, the Datalogix becomes not Datalogix, but Oracle data. Like, when all those things hatch up and you do the flyover and you look at those brands, you're like, that's the place. And we've got all the tiles in place. They just need to mature and the dialogue needs to mature outside.
You think we have all the tiles in place?
I think it would be amazing to have, an Amazon, a Facebook, an Apple that's, when they move into the space, they're a net contributor. No matter how many employees come in and work there, and no matter how many employees spin out and go work somewhere else, the organization itself is healthy. Facebook.
Isn't there sometimes that there's too much emphasis on the number of people they're going to hire?
Totally.
I mean, it just seems like everybody wants to talk about that. I'm like, if we're only going out for people, going after businesses that we think are going to increase employment, it just seems sort of like it's a limiting kind of concept, right? Because
And it's the right type of employees, too. I mean, I think when you look at the top triangle of, what I would say are high profile IT, next generation, data scientist type workers. They make a lot of money. They're highly talented. They're highly skilled. They're highly educated. And having tens of those jobs changes your economy. You're seeing it in Boulder with Google. I think to your point, it's not as important to focus on the jobs as it is the type of jobs, because one of those type of jobs produces 5 jobs in that same community just to service it.
Yeah.
So if I hire a data scientist from Google in Mountain View, I've got a dry cleaner, I've got an Uber taxi driver, I've got 3 people at Whole Foods. Like, I've got all these things that come in to support that. So it's the type of job's critical. The other two things I'd say that are really important is, and this was probably the most provocative thing, is that I don't think from a density perspective, and Luke, you and I have talked about this a lot, bankable known quantity entrepreneurs in our ecosystem, the density around those, we don't have the density yet of the companies that have gone public, produced a bunch of proceeds for a bunch of people to go at it again. We don't have tens of entrepreneurs like the Brian Leeches and the John Levises, the Andre Durans, the Luke Beatties. We don't have tens of those walking around our community yet, where it's just easy to say, I'm going to fund that. Because when they do show up, and if Luke left AOL tomorrow and you said, I'm going to go start a new company, your cycle to raise your round of capital would be moments. And Danny is, you've had 5, 7 companies.
Danny's coming with me.
Okay, perfect. Danny's coming too. But your ability to raise capital is going to be very, very short. And I think that's something that we've got to overcome, is just recruiting more John Levises, recruiting these folks that come in from outside to build their companies here, the Eric Reimers, the Andre Durans. When you look at our biggest gazelles or our biggest unicorns, Eric Rosa, San Francisco, John Levises and Josh at Craftsy, San Francisco. You look at the team at ProtectWise, San Francisco. So there's a bunch of value around that. And I think growing our own, but also recruiting folks in will help. The last thing, which is most important, is just why I'm doing Project Excite, is the best cities that have the most innovative cultures and most innovative ecosystems, they're anchored by a university. And whether it's Michigan, whether it's Austin, whether it's San Francisco, or whether it's Boston, those, even Research Triangle, those areas are deeply, deeply rooted in the research core. They're deeply rooted in the higher education core that supports the innovation ecosystem. And Boulder's done the best job in the state building those pieces together. And I think there's a huge opportunity to leverage the work that's been done in Denver to really help, you know, build that gateway. And not just at DU, but, you know, across, you know, the campuses in our community college space and our other areas of higher ed. But that's a missing link, and we don't have it.
Okay, so this is more of a three-word answer question. If you, knowing all the things that you know from the last two major things that you've been working on and what you see at DU and what you see as an innovation officer, if somebody gave you this right-hand or left-hand choice of the Denver-Boulder area needs more venture capital money or it needs more of these bigger enterprises headquartered here, what is your answer to that question? If you could only have one, what would it be?
Bigger enterprise companies that stay and sprawl. That's,
okay.
Period. We need a Datalogix to not sell to Oracle, which has been great. They're going to give back. It's going to be a great asset for Oracle. Eric and that entire team they're already investing. They're already doing amazing things. But the difference between selling at $1.4 billion or $1.6 billion, whatever it's sold for, and building a $50 billion campus somewhere in our ecosystem, those are dynastic. And, you know, I would love to have, and that's a really big company. I would love to have a few more Dish scale companies, a few more DaVita scale companies, a few more OtterBox scale companies in our ecosystem. That's that magnet. That's going to be much more impactful. And that'll,
got it.
Capital will come. Okay. Capital will come.
Now, topic number two is around the government situation. So I've had meetings with Hickenlooper and a lot of people have pitched in everywhere I can. I think I still struggle with what does the state and city and local government really do for startups, not for DaVita or any of these kinds of that. We understand that there's a lot of a lot of assists,
and there. Definitely not for small businesses, not your dry cleaner and your pizza shop, which right. I think is
high growth companies,
right?
I think local government gets confused.
I feel like there's
sure.
all these sort of like forced conversations around that. Like, yeah. well, maybe the state should have a fund. Are there any sort of tax tweaks that we could make that would better enable startups? I always feel like those conversations are not really, you know, and the pace at which they move is obviously very different. From your background in working in all these areas, like what is it that could be the way that those two could and should work together? And is it really, you know, it's not worth the kind of, there's not enough there. Maybe the better thing is to work with the bigger companies and let it run downstream, and that's how it would actually affect it. But what's your thought there?
Yeah, I think there is a there. I think there's two things that, you know, having a foot both in the innovation and startup community and having a foot in government, I think the next wave of what we're going to see is real innovation is going to happen alongside in partnership and with government. You've already seen it with things like Uber. You've already seen it with things like Airbnb. Companies will live and die by their ability to manage their opportunity, their forward momentum, and their operating activity with government. And the opportunity in Colorado is that we've got a very open government. We've got people that are really engaging around these topics, and we've worked through some of the toughest solutions. Like the solution that we created in Colorado for Uber, not a lot of people know this. It was called the Colorado solution. And intentionally, because we figured it out before the rest of the world did, and Travis quicker. And Travis is like, that Colorado thing, that shit worked. Go do that everywhere around the world we can. And Colorado's our model. If we're the Colorado solution for Uber, we should be the Colorado solution for everything in this innovation economy. So I'd say number one, the white space and the opportunity to collaborate and define the future economies in partnership with government. If we can do it faster, we will beat people to the finish line to drive the new economies in our state, number one. And I would say number two is that these ideas that people have, there's never been a better time to bring them to the surface and engage in government. I've seen things happen really quickly. You know, with our AI, our advanced infrastructure fund that the Office of Economic Development runs, you know, they've been really engaging. Like, what's working? What's not working? Which cycle? Are we funding the right things? Are we funding the wrong things? Like, that dialogue's happening in real time. And I think if people who want to be involved in it, that door's wide open. And Colorado's wide open for business. And I think because of the combination of the administration, Governor Hickenlooper's leadership around innovation, entrepreneurship, and this topic, plus with the drive to do things really fast to be the best state in the nation in these topics, if you want to be involved, raise your hand. We'll get you involved. I'll help. Anyone who wants to do it, it's never been a better time. And so I think the combination of disruption alongside in collaboration with actually saying I want to do something to do it and then actually doing it, Colorado is one of the rare unions where we can, one of the rare states where we can do that.
What's last question here? I think we're going to wrap up here in a sec. What's something that you would change or fix? What's broken in our kind of Denver Boulder tech scene right now?
He's a really positive guy. This is a tough question for him. Look at him. Look at him struggling to come up with something.
What I'd fix? That is a hard question because I think that the things that we've built. People vote with their feet. And so like the things that have not been successful, people don't show up for any longer, whether they're programs or their events or whether they're accelerators. Like if they don't work, people don't go. I think, I still think there's a really big opportunity for us to continue to elevate the ecosystem across the Front Range. I mean, I think we're at this graduating point. When we started Startup Colorado 4 years ago, the whole intent was to say, okay, there's amazing things in Colorado Springs, Fort Collins, Boulder, and Denver. We're not that far apart. Let's unite and become whatever we call it. And we're Colorado.
So we need to start including Fort Collins and other places, I guess, on this podcast.
And Longmont and Loveland.
Is there a turnpike there?
That's all Boulder, right?
It's Boulder.
Yeah, the Fort Collins Turnpike.
Unincorporated Boulder. Yeah. Unincorporated Boulder.
Okay.
But
that was kind of a shot at us, I think.
You guys.
But I think... if we were doing anything different, I just think getting that dialogue continually elevated faster and just there's no wrestling. Colorado Springs needs to be known for the stuff they're amazing at. Defense, cybersecurity, software, they crush. You know, look at what's happening in Fort Collins. They've got really good physical manufacturing with OtterBox. They've got, Agritech with drone companies. They've just got really cool things happening there. So I think letting people own their own domain, propping them up and – the faster we can continue to be that San Francisco where it's six cities that's one city, the better it is for all of us. Mm. And I think that we're closer than we've ever been. And I think, getting off a DIA and being able to take a train in 23 minutes downtown or 33 minutes downtown, whatever the math is, it's going to change the way that people get around. And then you go to Boulder and Fort Collins, Colorado Springs, and it feels like we're together.
Yep.
And we're really, really close. And the more we can do that, the better.
All right. Well, thanks for taking some time to come over here and talk with us. As you know, we all admire you tremendously. You're the guy that makes everybody else feel really bad about how much the lack of civic effort they put into their lives. So hopefully that will rub off certainly on Danny and I. But again, the DU thing, the Chief Innovation Officer, all the things that you do there. They're really great, and I feel like for a lot of us that work in this community, the people that usually have those jobs are 100 arm lengths away from the people that are actually starting companies and running companies, and I think, everybody in this town feels like you're the greatest lawyer they could ever have in that position because you're exactly like they are, and well, they don't feel like there's a huge disconnect there because you have been in our shoes as an entrepreneur, and you're also... kind of know how everybody looks and feels and their perspective on it. So as you're out there, we always feel really, really well represented and it's our job to help out more. So,
well, Luke, Danny, thank you so much for getting this started. I think this dialogue is the dialogue we need to connect all these pieces I mentioned earlier. But this is a huge family. I look at startup community building, innovation community building, the work that we're doing in the state. We can never have enough hands on the wheel in the rowboat trying to make Colorado the number one undisputed innovation capital in the United States. And we're in the race. We haven't finished and there's a long road ahead. But great guys like you that are taking the initiative to build these types of things, build amazing companies, it's inspiring to me. And, the whole reason that I do what I do is that, I'm a passionate entrepreneur at my core. And if I can give back and remove barriers, open up opportunities and make it easier for you and people like you to build companies here, like my work is done. And I do it with my heart. I do it with all my will. And, as many volunteers and other people that share that passion, I love working alongside of. And that secret of collaboration and giving back is what makes this place so special. And I just feel honored to be here.
Cheers, Derek Gatusik. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you for everything
Thank you, guys.
You do.
You've been listening to Turnpikers, a show about the people who make up the Denver and Boulder tech community. You can reach us directly and discover more about the show at turnpikers.com and at turnpikers on Twitter. Please send us your questions, comments, and recommend future guests.